multiple messages on screen to when the audio definition navigation becomes available. This station will now stream on the
Welcome to the Casual Preppers Podcast. Here are your hosts, Cam and Kobe.
Welcome to the Casual Preppers Podcast, the only place for prepping, survival, and entertainment. We're your hosts, Cameron and Kobe, and we are ready to bring survival goodness direct to your dirty little ear holes.
Straight down, deep inside.
It's deep inside. How's those nachos?
They're freaking good.
Are they?
They're like, call my name. I'm like, come on, slip one more in before I'm
don't
done.
Do it while we're while
nobody
we're podcasting.
Likes that.
Yeah.
Nobody.
How goes it, Cameron?
It goes good.
Yeah, good.
We're going to get all scientific.
Yeah, we...
going to attempt to sound smart.
We were, the past few weeks, you know, trying to figure out this episode, we felt like we were like half scientist guys, like talking big words and... Well, yeah. I read this report that
said... actually, the studies show the temperature difference here is...
Yeah, what are we talking about today?
We're going to break down the threat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the good and the threat of nuclear.
Mm-hmm. Nuclear. Power good job. That's right. Yeah, we're talking about when a power plant melts down. Is it good? Is it bad? Yeah. Is it... Well, it's bad.
That's the closest that civilians are to... Uh-huh. You know, a nuke, know, really.
It's a crazy deal. So we're going to talk about that today. But first, guys, today's podcast is brought to you by our friends at TacPack, the only monthly tactical subscription box with useful professional-grade stuff inside. Get 10% off your first TacPack with our code CASUALPREPPERS at TacPack.com and join the thousands of satisfied subscribers today. That's 10% off with our code CASUALPREPPERS at TacPack.com. Guys, go get it and be one of the cool kids, all right?
Listener, reviews starts now.
You are not a pup.
No, I'm not.
Didn't even get a chance to say it.
I was going pretty quick. Let's look at the
listener review.
Listener review, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, do you want me to go for it?
I'll do it.
It's a big one.
I'll butcher it. I know. I was already intimidated.
So take a deep breath.
Hello from East Georgia. I burped, so yeah. I'm ready.
Yeah.
Hello from East Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
I watched your first chapter, Gone, and let me just say, whichever one of you was in the video has a face for radio for sure.
That was a dick move.
That was.
Man.
That being said, your podcast is very entertaining and full of information worth listening to. I like your approach, not too serious, but get her done at your lazy-ass pace. I don't care what other people say. The voices in your head that come out in the podcast are hilarious and make the subject more relatable. I only recently discovered your podcast, but am working my way through the backlog. I always enjoy listening to your conspiracy episodes and agree with your point of view. Screw those flat earthers and moonlander unbelievers. Other people should not be insulted by what comes out of your mouth. If they are that sensitive, they won't survive the zombie apocalypse. Anyways, so who really cares?
Ryan, the lazy prepper.
Yeah, that was good.
Thank you, Ryan.
Even though the insult hurt a little bit, but that's okay.
If you guys want to be a part of this portion of the podcast, go to iTunes, go to Facebook, go to the Kindle book on Amazon, leave us a 5-star review, and make it awesome.
It's a mad, mad world.
Who?
That was Kobe, by the way. That's face. Whose face
that was not Kobe, by the way. Yeah,
that was my mug.
I think you look gorgeous, so I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah,
so
I don't care either.
So, Mad Mad World, Cameron, do you want to go first, or you want me to go?
I don't care.
Okay, well, let me go.
Knock
then.
It out.
Here I am. Cameron, I saw this article this last week, and it is just like the epitome of something you read about Russia all the time. So, this says, beluga whale found by Norwegian fishermen could be trained by the Russian military. Cameron... They're training whales, man.
No one would have ever expected that.
No. A beluga whale found with a tight harness that appeared to be Russian-made has raised the alarm of Norwegian officials and prompted speculation that the animal may have escaped from a Russian military facility.
That's what I think when I see whales.
I know.
I bet that escaped from the Russians.
Yeah, the Russians are training that sucker. Beware.
It looks like a real whale.
Yeah. Is that one of them robot whales?
The tail sticks out and just kind of doesn't move.
I've seen Jaws before. I know how this goes. I just thought it was funny that they're like, they seriously think that it was been trained by the Russian military. And like I said, epitome of anything you read about Russia. You know? Yeah. Anyways,
there's such a interesting country there. I mean, we all feel pretty secure around them. We know that they're not doing anything shady. So
yeah, exactly.
Just practicing with whales.
Mm-hmm.
So recently, I thought this was kind of cool. Is it Fort? I just told you that too.
What?
What fort practiced the power outage?
I don't know.
Fort
Bragg. No.
Yeah, it was one of the big ones. I think it was. Anyways.
Oh yeah, I forgot.
That without telling anybody that they were going to do it, that, you know, just a small group within that facility, they shut down the power on the whole base.
Yeah.
And so they wanted to see the response and how everybody would function. And I think it went pretty well, but still it caused a lot of confusion. The biggest problems that people had posted about were like getting out of the base and the traffic and the lights being a mess.
Losing their Mario Kart game right in the middle of it.
Yeah, yeah. Their guns shut down. They couldn't even shoot.
I hate these freaking plug-in guns.
Yeah. But obviously the military is taking, I think they've always thought the EMP would be a serious deal. And, yeah. But they're really thinking a little bit more, I think, now they're implementing these drills and seeing how it's going to function. So kind of scary. You never know.
It'd be so cool to watch and see how everybody handles that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm sure
they're up there drinking their coffee like, look at all that.
Look at those idiots.
Look at that.
Write that down.
Mid-surgery. What are they going to do?
Finish the appendectomy. Finish it.
Yeah. And they're going to deliver the baby. We'll see what they do. That's going to be great.
Come on, baby. Come
Cut the umbilical cord. That was his hand. Yeah, so anyway, crazy world.
That is a crazy
practicing world. Practicing grid down.
So, Cameron, we've done an episode. We did an episode on nuclear war, surviving nuclear war.
Right.
And this is somewhat similar just because
the
conditions, some of the conditions are similar, right?
Right, right.
So we're talking about—
Radiation's radiation.
Yeah, radiation is radiation. We're talking about surviving a nuclear meltdown. And these are things that have absolutely happened. We're going to talk about some of those incidences, some here in the United States, around the world, our friends in Russia. Yeah, that's just some really good stuff. Yeah. So let's just get right into it. We're going to talk about surviving a nuclear meltdown. Currently in the United States, there's 104 nuclear reactors. That doesn't necessarily mean there's 104 nuclear power plants, but there's 104 nuclear reactors in the United States. That's just the United States. And
how many in the world did it say?
I don't know. I don't know the
a
world.
A lot?
Muy many. Muy many.
Muy radiators.
Yeah. 6 million Americans live within a 10-mile radius from a nuclear reactor.
No kidding.
So that's a...
Well, that's safe.
That's very
safe. We'll talk about that.
So we're talking to you 6 million people right now. And yeah, then as well
you're
as
one of those.
As well as probably, you know, double or triple
Homer
that.
Simpson?
Huh? Yeah, he works at the plant.
He does.
Yeah. And you would think that Homer Simpson was working at 3 Mile Island, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
But anyways, so let's talk about a nuclear plant. What is it? What do they do? Well, they produce energy, Cameron.
Believe it.
And they use the process called nuclear fission. And so basically what that is they're splitting atoms.
Super weird.
It's super weird. Those little tiny things.
Like it doesn't even make sense.
They're splitting atoms, and that creates energy. And then I don't
want to get heat.
There's so much to go into. It's such a technical thing. But
basically, all I need to know.
Yeah, so the nuclear energy that's released, it heats up these rods, they're fuel rods, inside a reactor, and they're made of enriched uranium. So this is where like uranium and plutonium and all those types of things come from, right? And then the water, which needs water to cool off, right? And so basically the steam turns a turbine and it produces energy. And there you go. You have nuclear energy.
You're boiling water all day long.
Yeah. But Cameron, sometimes things go wrong.
Right.
So what does that look like?
Yeah. So the big thing about the power plant is that a meltdown can occur.
Yeah.
And then what happens with a meltdown? Hmm?
I'll tell you what. When my wife melts down,
it releases all kinds of power and energy.
It is bad, and you need to be out of that 10-mile radius, all those types of things. You need a plastic sheeting.
Hide.
You need a bug-out bag. You need a bunch of shit.
This makes total sense.
Yeah.
Meltdown.
Yeah.
So,
sorry, honey, I love you. Happy birthday, by the way. It's her birthday today. Happy birthday, baby.
That's right. It is today, huh? You're going to get it. Yeah. Don't let her listen. Don't release this till tomorrow morning.
I just told her happy birthday. She's all right.
Okay.
I'm listening to this meltdown with her right now, and she's looking at me like, what the hell?
Meltdowns
yeah.
avoided.
Yep.
So a meltdown, like Kobe was explaining, the rods, the uranium, enriched uranium, gives off mm-hmm. tons of heat. So the main thing is keeping those cool during the process.
Mm-hmm.
And there's multiple ways that could go wrong. So those cores, you know, they can get anywhere when they're not cooled to like 2,000 plus degrees.
It's a lot of degrees.
It's like super.
And let's preface this whole conversation by, we're going to get this wrong.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's so much to this.
If there is a nuclear physicist, listen to this.
Chill.
You're already messed up.
Yeah.
You're already going backwards.
You're going to yell at us. You're going to like break your iPhone probably.
Yeah.
But just deal with it.
So this is like for dummies.
Yeah.
That you won't learn it much more from it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, so you've got all this energy, all this heat from the uranium, and you're keeping it cool while in the process you're generating energy from the steam that's turning the turbine.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to keep these nice and cool. What happens in a meltdown is that cooling system fails. There's like tons of different ways.
Yeah.
You can get a bubble in the line. You can have a mechanical failure where the power that's pushing the water through and circulating shuts down. You can get low pressures, so you're not getting enough water around them. And it's just a bad thing.
A combination of all those things.
Yeah, so they get really, really hot. And then when you try to cool them down with more water, that water obviously can just, like, you drop a turkey in a,
yeah,
you know,
a fryer.
Yep, it just explodes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of safety measures now to kind of prevent the damage. But we'll talk about what happens, what has happened in the past that they've learned from. So what could cause these meltdowns? Sabotage. You know, you can have somebody go in.
Sabotage.
And mess up the system, turn off safety features.
Yeah.
And then you got a problem. Terrorism, same kind of thing. Natural disasters we saw, and we'll talk about the Japan incident where mm-hmm. Whatever, an earthquake or tsunami or the combination or any major weather event could cause problems to power failure.
Yep.
And the backup systems, as we'll see, don't always, you know, secure that. Cyber attack. Another thing is to destroy the power grid, and then you lose, which is weird. Power stations need power to produce more power.
Exactly, yeah. They have power to keep that water pumping.
Yeah.
They have some backups, but those but only last for so long. Yeah,
there's diesel power, there's generator, and I'm sure an EMP would cause some major havoc.
Yeah.
Then human error. We'll learn about the old Chernobyl.
Mm-hmm.
That was human error. Mechanism failure, like I was saying, the different systems that pump the fluid or anything could go wrong with those suckers, which is kind of freaky. So there's multiple ways that could cause failure of the cooling system and mm-hmm. lead to super high heat and explosion or just release of toxic.
Yeah. So there can be explosions. There can just be release of
radiated
fluid or steam.
Just the steam's radiated and it can like spread it all out into the atmosphere.
There's a lot of different ways things can go wrong.
Anyway, that's a meltdown.
Yeah. So first off, this is actually they're pretty safe when it comes down to it. They're actually pretty dang safe. But like we said, these things can happen. And just like anything else we talk about, they're probably not going to happen.
We're not going to talk about all the environmental.
No.
Why you don't want to do this?
Yeah. But, I mean, when it comes down to the environment, they're actually one of the cleanest forms of energy that there is, right? There's no greenhouse gas emissions from a nuclear power
Way
plant.
Less.
Yeah.
It's just the
possibility of radiation and all those types of things.
And what is it, when they get rid of the, I don't know, those uranium rods, like, expire? Because I know they're trying to get rid of the waste.
Yeah.
That's the big problem,
The half-life on those things is a really, really long time.
So, anyway.
Okay, so let's talk about some of these incidences when they've actually happened. Let's start in the United States just because that's where most of us are. So Three Mile Island, March 28th, 1979 is when...
You know, I didn't even know about this until
pretty
recent.
I'd heard of it, but I didn't know a whole lot. So Mile Island Unit 2 reactor, it's near Middleton, Pennsylvania, partially melted down on March 28th, 1979. So it wasn't a full meltdown. It was just a partial meltdown. almost. It was all started, this is crazy, by a small valve that malfunctioned. It just didn't close.
Mechanism.
Yeah, it was a small little valve.
Crazy.
That basically led to too much cooling water being lost, and the core started to overheat, right? That's what you were talking about. Then there was human error as they shut off the emergency water system that would have cooled the core. So if they wouldn't have shut it off.
Oh, really?
If they wouldn't have shut off.
The mechanism was down, then the backup or whatever, they shut off.
They shut it off for, because they were getting all these crazy readings and they just didn't know exactly what to do. But if they would have just left that, everything would have been fine. There would have been no issues whatsoever. They said that there were so many alarms going off at once. So when these alarms would go off back then in 1979, it would print out the data for them and say, okay, this is why this alarm is going off and this is what's going on. But it took an hour and a half for it to print out everything that was going wrong.
They're tearing the corner, the sides off the
exactly.
paper.
Oh, no. But it was so far gone at that point. You know, they were an hour and a half behind getting the data.
It doesn't take much with the friggin' radiation.
Exactly.
You're like, oh, no.
So that didn't help at all. So contaminated water leaked, and there was partial damage to the core. So basically, like I said, a partial meltdown. So thousands of people started to be evacuated from the area. That's basically as far as it went, though. This was the most serious incident in the U.S. commercial nuclear power plant operating history. But it basically brought a whole bunch of changes in safety mechanisms and things like that for nuclear energy.
As serious as it could have been.
Yeah, exactly. But the total cost for this thing was $1 billion just because of the partial meltdown.
Wow.
Yeah.
$1 billion then?
Mm-hmm.
Holy freak.
That's a lot of money. So the approximately 2 million people around during the accident are estimated to have received an average radiation dose of only about 1 millirem. I think that's how you say that, above the usual background dose, which actually is not bad at all.
That's crazy.
So yeah, to put that in context, exposure from a chest x-ray is about 6 millirem. And so, that's basically almost nothing, right?
Yeah, that's surprising.
I know, it is kind of crazy, huh?
Is it true, though?
I don't know. It says, in the months following the accident, although questions were raised about possible adverse effects from radiation on human, animal, and plant life in the area, none could be directly correlated to the accident. But that's the biggest one that's happened in the United States.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's
that is crazy.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty dang good so far. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, obviously, arguably the most famous was Chernobyl. So, this was in Ukraine, which was at the time Soviet Union.
Yeah.
And this was April 26, 1986. So what had happened with this is that, so Chernobyl is kind of interesting if you see where it's at. Like it has this one town that's now completely just a ghost town.
Yeah.
What, Pripyat or whatever. How do you say it?
I don't know.
And then there was Chernobyl. There's another town that was called Chernobyl.
Oh, God.
Anyway, so what had happened was in the middle of the night, which is cool. There's a series right now that I'm going to definitely
watch. It's HBO, right?
I think it's...
Was it HBO?
I don't think it's HBO.
Oh.
Maybe it is.
I don't know.
It is. Anyway.
Let me look it up.
But it looks awesome. Goes into kind of the cover-up and everything like that. So what had happened is early morning, the...
Yeah, I think it's HBO.
The dummies there, so this was human error. They had turned off some safety features doing like a drill for like a power cycle type of thing.
Yeah.
So they had shut off these.
That's HBO.
Is it HBO? Mm-hmm. Okay. They'd shut these down and we're doing this drill. And what had happened is, so I guess let me tell you a little bit about the reactor there. So this was a Soviet built reactor and it was called the RBMK 1000 or something like that. Sounds like a great one.
Yeah.
This is different from the United States type of reactor because the way that it heats, or actually is cooled down is by graphite instead of by water.
Oh, that's
so interesting. So the different thing about, or what caused the biggest problem with that was instead of, so the United States based ones, when the water is around the reactor and cooling it, the bubbles and stuff actually reduce the heat.
The heat, yeah.
So it's kind of a negative feedback. Mm-hmm. With the graphite one, the hotter the water gets and the bubbles actually would increase the heat of the core. So without these safety features that were turned off, what had happened is the temperature rose and when they got the water back on the reactor, it was just like I was saying, when you drop a turkey into grease, it just exploded. It blew the top right off from the reactor.
Oh, my gosh.
And they didn't have the encasement that we do in the United States.
Yeah.
So once that blew, it just shot like isotopes of, I think it was like chlorine and, I don't know, what was it? Iodine. Oh. So the iodine and cesium and all of those just like immediately got ejected out into the atmosphere.
Yeah, because
like there was no fault. There was no like recovery. Right.
Normally
after
they have an encasing within like
yeah, and it's massive too.
Several
wasn't
buildings,
it like
right?
Several feet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this one, once the reactor blew the top off because of the excessive heat, and then it just kept heating because they couldn't cool it down with the water the way their cooling system worked.
Oh,
it just was spewing out radiation like immediately, and this So what had happened is they didn't really understand how much was in and react to it very quickly. So there was tons of people exposed to it. There was two killed in the explosion immediately, and then a lot that were around the area. There's actually some heroic guys that knew, mm-hmm. you know, they were getting exposed to this massive amount of radiation, but they knew they needed to get it stopped. So that's what happened in the Chernobyl accident, and it the explosion damaged the second reactor, and so it started to melt down.
Oh,
so you
geez.
Had one that was just spewing out tons of radiation, and then the other one was damaged.
God, that is so scary.
And the freaky thing about the whole thing, which is this is a classic Russian move, is to cover it up. You know, they didn't talk about the extent of damage. They didn't talk about how much radiation had been coming out of the reactor. So there was delayed evacuation,
uh-huh.
and then downwind, like all of the European countries that got exposed to it, was actually how it came about of how serious it was a Swedish nuclear reactor alarms went off
because of Chernobyl's wind. Oh my gosh.
Isn't that freaky?
That's crazy.
They were like trying to figure out why it was going off, and come to find out it was from the leak. So 31 people died total from immediate exposure. And then they figure anywhere, it's hard to estimate, but they figure anywhere between 1,000 to some say because of the ongoing radiation exposure to people and then their thyroid cancers and different types of cancers, they figure anywhere from like 700,000 to 700,000.
Oh my
how you estimate
gosh.
That. But the other thing was during that time, some crappy stuff was that they had recommended women abort their children because they're like, you've had this radiation exposure. You're going to have all these health problems. Just abort them. So they couldn't even factor in all that. And then the radiation exposure long term. But this one was obviously the worst because it rendered that area, the city that had been finally evacuated,
mm-hmm.
Uninhabitable for like 300 years.
That's insane.
There's so much radiation.
Yeah.
And the other big problem is they had to enclose it. You know, they call it the sarcophagus now, but they need to replace it because it's got a crack in it.
Oh my gosh.
So
they
the
built
radiation,
something over it, right?
Yeah, they had to, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So it's a huge mess, and it's still, there's just now starting to get some like trees and wildlife, you know, three-eyed deer.
I'm kidding, man.
This is normal.
this is normal, don't worry.
We have two-headed cat. This is Russian normal.
Our cats are better in Russia. We have two heads, not just one.
So anyways, massive problem there. And it's terrifying how much radiation was immediately sent out across the country in mm-hmm. multiple countries from the wind and then the cover-up. So that was a horrible history of a nuclear disaster.
That's crazy.
Anyway.
So one of the most recent ones, and I wish my notes were, I lost my good notes. I had a much better notes
on
this, and they're gone for some reason.
Freaking Evernote.
Yeah, it's giving me issues here. But we're going to talk about Fukushima, and this is one that a lot more people know a little bit about just because it's been more recent, and it's kind of affected us over here a little bit just because of some of the things that happened. So basically, the Fukushima accident, It was in Japan, obviously. There was an earthquake that happened in March of 2011. And when that earthquake happened, a bunch of crap went wrong. So immediately after the earthquake, the active reactors automatically shut down all their fission reactions. So that was good.
This one was a nightmare for
them. Yeah, it was a huge nightmare.
I saw, like, wasn't the initial thing, like, the rods, they come up in between the uranium rods to try and cool it down?
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of a cool
feature. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of weird features.
Because Toyota makes it, I guess.
Probably. Yeah, so that earthquake happened off the coast, you know, in the ocean. And so there's these seismic monitors on you all right?
I just splashed my drink in my eyeball.
So there's these monitors that monitor the seismic, you know, waves and stuff like that. So it shut down the nuclear reactor. So it wasn't actually doing the nuclear process. There was no more fission taking place. But that it doesn't matter because it's already so freaking hot in there.
Yeah, it's like if things are shut down, that doesn't mean shut
it
down.
It doesn't mean anything, right?
Right.
So then, like...
It's actually worse.
Yeah.
I think if you saw the power go off, you're like, oh, no.
Yeah. So then a couple hours later, the tsunami came and disabled the emergency generators that were still pumping the water through the cooling system. Because obviously, when the earthquake happened, the power went out, right? So at that point,
it's not a good thing.
This is very bad. So then the insufficient cooling led to 3 nuclear meltdowns, hydrogen air explosions, and the release of radioactive material in 1, 2, and 3 from 12th to the 15th of March. So
3 reactors were actually
3 leaking. Reactors melted down.
Oh, geez.
And then I think there was 4 reactors total, I think, there. I might be
Do they all wrong. Have 4 in them?
I don't know.
Or is it just a matter of...
I'm not sure. And then there was explosions, I think, in several of them.
They had a couple.
So basically, it's so complicated.
Then like 4 safety mechanisms failed. Yeah. It's like diesel and then electric failed. And then...
Because then they ended up having to bring in like seawater because they couldn't get the other water to come in. And when they did that, the salt reacted with hydrogen and all these different things and just caused explosions and all these bad things happened.
This is terrifying because it's like the Japanese are freaking smart.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and they had all these safety measures. Mm-hmm.
They even had like a seawall.
And they knew, I was like, weren't they built for tsunami risks?
Yeah, they had this big old seawall, but the tsunami was so big. The tsunami went in like 10 kilometers inland.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, and that was so terrifying.
Yeah, it just took out, obviously, tons of towns. But when it went over the seawall, it just did a whole bunch. I mean, it disabled all their generators. Oh, it was so
it's like,
bad.
It's not like they were, like, Russian, that was just a terrible system, but this was like a perfect system, really.
It really was. Failed. And so I really had the hardest time finding out how many people died from this.
Yeah.
Like I found some sites that said no deaths, everything's fine. Then I saw some that said, it's probably up to 600 people.
Yeah.
I
was living in Washington at the time, like in mm-hmm. Olympia, Washington. And I remember thinking about it. I'm like, it's going to come across the ocean in the to the Pacific coast. And just like what was like a year or two later, they started detecting higher levels of thyroid.
Yep.
Like markers for people living on the. Oh, that's terrifying.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely insane.
Miles and miles away. So crazy.
Yeah. So there's been lots of screening programs and things that went on after that, you know, and they did, you know, detect some higher levels of thyroid cancer in and around the area there and a bunch of different things.
I didn't hurt anything like with the Japanese. Like what kind of damage did it do
they
for
say
people
the
around
the worst
it?
Part it was they had to evacuate everybody, obviously. I mean, they were probably...
And where do you evacuate to?
Where do you evacuate to? But they said 1,600 elderly and sick people died because they had to evacuate out of the places they were at. You know,
and they're already
in bad shape.
Country,
yeah.
Oh my gosh!
And so they had about 1,600 people die because of the evacuation, not because of the actual, you know, radiation and that type of thing. But that just goes to show it's not always the initial disaster that gives you problems. Sometimes it's I have to, you know. So that's pretty crazy.
They were like pumping seawater in there too, weren't
they?
Yeah, they try and cool it.
That's why I said that was part of the issue. Is they pumped that seawater in there, and it had salt in the seawater.
I wonder what that would do.
Reacted to the hydrogen and a couple other things, and that's what caused explosions.
Oh, that's what it did. Okay.
I think. I mean, I've seen so many videos and read so many things.
Yeah.
That it's really hard to tell.
So is that plant like rendered? Like, is it done?
So,
or did they rebuild it? Or?
Yeah, it's done. They did the same thing. They built things over top of it.
It's gone.
They're trying to clean stuff up. So this happened in 2011. They just barely lifted the evacuation order for the town.
No kidding.
They just barely did. Wow. So originally there was about 11,000 people that lived there. About 400 people have moved back. To the area. There's some issues though, because they've been gone for so long. There's been like nobody in the town that wild boars have basically taken over the town.
Really?
Yeah. And monkeys, both of them. And they're all radiated
monkeys.
They're radiated monkeys and boars. So they are just like, I mean, because everybody just left in a hurry. I don't know if you've
like
seen
King Kong.
Yeah. Basically King Kong. If you've seen the photos of town, like you go, they've got photos of like, they've got photos of like grocery stores and stuff, and this like everything's off the shelves because everybody left just like that day, basically.
It's creepy.
You know what I mean? But the monkeys and the boars have just been roaming town and eating all the food. And so they've actually hired people to come in and kill
them.
So
they got bunkies.
They got bunkies. That's right.
They got moors.
Yeah. So that's actually a bad deal.
Wow. That's great. I didn't hear about that.
And so they've actually detected contaminated salmon all the way into the U.S., like you said, you know, right up to the coast of the U.S. So, but I mean, that's all bad stuff. But the actual earthquake and the tsunami killed 15,000 people.
Yeah.
So. You know what I mean?
Compounded by that's like the ultimate nightmare.
So if you think about it, it's just like three disasters in one. This is an earthquake, this is a tsunami, and this is a nuclear meltdown, like all on one this little tiny island.
That is terrible.
Yeah. So that's just sort of a snapshot of what can happen around a nuclear power plant. It can. You know what I mean? And we have 104 reactors here.
Like you were saying, we got the technology of Japan, you know, is amazing, and all of their safety measures failed. So
they did.
No matter what, one of them, they're all susceptible.
Yeah, so obviously, if you're one of these like 6 million people that live within 10 miles in the United States, listen up, because you have to be vigilant. You have to be prepared for it. Probably not going to happen because our safety measures are so great. But like I said, so were they in Fukushima.
Yeah. You know? So what are some of the things?
So some of the essential things are some of the essential things you should always think about. You know, don't live within 50 miles of a nuclear power plant if you can avoid it. Because
still 6 million within that, though.
Yeah, within 10 miles.
10.
That's within 10 miles. So there's more within 50. Yeah, according to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, within 50 miles, that's like the danger zone, you know. exactly. So there's actually an interactive map you can find online.
That's cool. I didn't even
it's like
know that existed.
tmapsevents.esri.com. So, I mean, there's a big thing, but if you just search nuclear power,
I love how they just like recommend don't live near it, and then people are like, can you move that sign? I'm gonna build a house right there.
Yeah, right there. Exactly. So think about. There's several things that could happen in a meltdown. You might have a mandatory evacuation order, right?
Yeah.
Or you might be just far enough outside that they say, shelter in place, do not come out of your house, idiot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to kind of be ready for two different things.
Yeah.
So have your basic supplies in order in case you have to do one of those. You need to be thinking about if there's a nuclear meltdown, you know how quick local water supplies could be
contaminated.
Yeah. So you... Water preps, man. Water preps. We talk about it all the time, but get your freaking water preps.
That's a huge problem, yeah.
Yes. Food preps, too, because, again, you're in a disaster situation. You don't know if
all
you're going to be
able to... All that stuff can get radiated.
You don't know. Or it can be a mess downtown. Power could be gone, obviously. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So you're probably getting fed from the...
Yep. Food and water preps are very important. The next one on importance is comms. Make sure you have an emergency radio, ways to contact the outside. Understand the threat, what's going on, because information is going to be your biggest ally in an event like this. Because you need to make a really informed decision. Do I need to shelter in place or do I need to go? So you need to have as much information as you possibly can. And like I said, have a bug out bag ready in case you do need to head out, you know, and have a bug out vehicle. And the next thing is make sure you have some extra meds in case you're bugging in, you know, sheltering in place. If you can't go out and get your, you know, whatever meds you need, make sure you have some extras.
Yeah.
So that's kind of just the really, really basics, the essential things to think about in these situations.
Right.
Yeah.
And I always thought that like radiation was like invisible and, you know, it's like in the air, which it is, but it does stick on the fallout is that, you know, dust and debris and all that crap. So some basic gear to have on top of like your regular food and water. And it's good to, like we've said before, 3 to 6 months so that you don't really have to come out and be exposed to that crap.
Yeah.
They've measured, you know, if you have just a standard house basement, your reduction in radiation, you know, to whatever, whether it be a bomb or a meltdown, how much radiation exposure you're susceptible to. If it's a like a masonry built house, it's even less.
Yeah.
That bunker obviously is like the best. But, you know, you never know. You don't know how far it's going to travel. You don't know what the wind direction is and all that stuff. So it's good to have some different basic items in your preps. So, and Kobe talked about communications. You know, have ways to charge, you know, hand crank.
Yeah.
You may not have that ability to get solar power because you're not going to want to even go anywhere near the outside for who knows how long. But plastic sheeting, you know, you can isolate your basement even further. You can create like a... like a air vault type of thing. You know, you tape off the one and then you've got like watch ET.
Exactly.
You'll see exactly how to do that.
Yeah.
Having duct tape to seal off all those areas and having, like, say you do got to go out and you have some proper gear, you want like a washroom, you know, a room that you come in, take all your stuff off, isolate it from everything else, and be able to clean yourself off. So, like, just baby wipes, anything. You don't have to have all the specifics. I mean, it's better, but just we'll a way to like clean and wipe yourself down and get everything off from you. And that's part of like a medical plan too. Mm-hmm. And then having even your N95, N99 aren't going to block out radiation, but they're going to block out that fallout dust and crap. So
it will help.
Any way you can limit the exposure of all those particles and crap, the better.
Yeah.
And so, in, you know, we're not going to go over all the basic gear and supplies that you have in your basement. We do that every episode. And so,
yeah, just know
the
that
the main things are, yeah, stuff. Keeping the radiated stuff. Because your scavenging is going to be super limited now because that crap's all contaminated.
I think the plastic sheeting and the duct tape are huge.
I think so, too.
You know,
you wrap yourself in it.
But yeah, if bodies. You have to, yeah. But you can, you know, cordon off just one room if you have to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And but that stuff's all really, like, the, you can get cheap. That plastic sheeting anywhere.
Yeah.
Gloves and just basic gear. Even people talk about having, like, a painter's outfit just to reduce.
I'm going
to
talk about some of that type of stuff.
Okay, good.
It's actually pretty simple. Yeah, so there is some specialty gear. If you're one of these people that live within, you know, 50 to 100 miles of these, I would suggest getting some of this specialty gear. It's pretty inexpensive. Some of it is. Why not just have it on hand? You know what I mean? The first thing I would say is Cam and I both got, this is from a battle box actually, we got a nuclear survival handbook. It's like $10. But it has tons.
And isn't that an old book? Like it's
older,
in the 70s or something?
But it has tons of information.
It does.
On radiation and nuclear survival and all those things. There's another one that's called U.S. Armed Forces Nuclear Biological and Chemical Survival Manual. It's also like $10.
So you can get, they're super cheap.
You can get both of those on Amazon. So just get one. It's $10.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No matter where you live, no matter what, that nuclear anything is always a risk.
And a lot of it goes, the one book like dispels myths and things like that that people don't really understand. So it's just really nice to have. Another thing is obviously the potassium iodide. This is these pills that will help block the radioactive iodine coming from this type of thing that gets absorbed into your thyroid. So that
didn't you say like in Japan it was like so, it was gone. Was gone, like they couldn't even get it.
Yeah, I mean, and people think this is sort of like a I get this pill, I'm going to be good. This basically only helps
one organ.
Your thyroid.
Yeah,
but your thyroid is really susceptible to these some of these radioactive.
So your balls
and your balls. Yeah, so just
I'm not joking there.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it is. So
it's like one of the most susceptible areas.
And they're really really pretty inexpensive to get these packs. You can get them on Amazon. Just have them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It'll protect your thyroid.
You got quite a bit, huh, from Amazon?
I got enough for my whole family.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And FDA has the directions to for dosing for every age.
Yep.
Usually it's like, what, like 135 daily?
Yeah, I can't remember the exact dose.
Right off
I
the
don't
bat
know.
Either.
Yeah. Is this something you put in there?
No.
Oh, okay. Maybe I didn't. Anyways, there's some other things you want to look at, too.
What was it?
I don't know. Don't worry about it.
Doesn't look like I did it.
Okay. There's some other stuff that Cam kind of touched on. A chemical protection suit. You can obviously get these hazmat suits that are crazy expensive, like up to like $1,000. Like we've talked about them before, I think. But I've actually found that those really cheap like Tyvek hazmat suits
are they're not very much, are they?
You can get it for $10.
Oh, really?
On Amazon. They look like a kind of a painter's outfit thing, but they're just like the white Tyvek suits.
Oh yeah,
for $10, and that will actually.
So are they cloth or are they like a vinyl, like a?
I
saw some of the like thicker rubbery type ones.
Yeah, it's not
like
rubber.
130 or
it's
something.
It's like, have you seen the Tyvek stuff they put on the outside of houses? You know, between a house and the.
Oh yeah, yeah, okay.
It's that same stuff basically.
$10,
so,
huh?
Yeah, you can get them for $10, and they say that it's NBC proof, you know, nuclear, biological, and chemical.
Oh yeah,
those. Why not just go get those for
$10? I'm gonna get one.
I know, dude. So why not just go get it? You can get it for $10
Halloween
on Amazon.
Costume, right there.
Yeah, exactly. But to make that thing actually really effective, you're gonna have to use it in conjunction with a gas mask.
Yeah.
Right, because you have to have everything covered to do this.
And that's where your tape comes in.
Exactly.
Or your plastic.
You want your tape, so you're going to want to tape any sort of
hole
or anything. So around your boots, and then your boots are going to have to be covered, so you're going to have something there around, you know, your neck where it connects to your gas mask. Everything's going to have to be taped up. You want to, because you don't want it to get on your skin either.
Yeah.
So when you're looking for a gas mask, you're going to want to look for one that is NBC.
This is always tough.
Yeah, or CBRN approved. Both of those are okay for nuclear fallout.
CBS? NBC?
NBC.
Fox?
No, Fox. No, absolutely not. Yeah, so NBC or CBRN approved. And then you're also going to have to make sure you get those approved filters, NBC or CBRN, for the mask, right? And then to really use it, you can't have
facial hair. So your killer prepper beard, it's got to come off.
It's got to come off if you're going to really get a good seal. The beard's not gonna happen for you.
Yeah, I saw some forums talking about like the suits and protective gear. It's like avoid any that have like little pockets and little areas crap. You just want it as smooth and sealed.
Yep,
I completely you really don't agree. Have to go over the top.
No, you don't. So you can get those masks. The cheapest I could find was around $100. But if you're going to get a good one, you're going to at least spend that much. But then it can go all the way up to like $500 or even more, you know. So I'm not going to tell you which kind to buy. To just make sure that it's NBC or CBRN approved. Another thing that might be nice to have is a Geiger counter. This is basically a piece of equipment that detects the amount of radiation in your environment. Really, really simple. You can get them on Amazon starting around at $80.
Yeah.
And then up. There's tons.
What's that one that we got that plugs into your phone?
Yeah.
Well, not your new phone.
Not in the new phone, no. I can't remember.
It uses a headphone jack.
Yeah, it uses the regular.
Pretty cool.
3.5 millimeter jack.
But
so basically it connects
like
to an app.
It's like a keychain, too. You just carry it.
Yeah, so a Geiger counter would be nice to have. At least you have a little more information about what's going on. Some of the stuff we got in a battle box.
Yeah,
a while
which
ago,
was pretty sweet.
It was a fantastic
it
box.
It was. That
man.
Was an awesome box.
I don't care
box.
What anyone says. So the another thing we got in there was the Radiac wash towelettes. And so these look like the little towelettes you get like at KFC. You know what I mean? But they're great for taking off radioactivity off your skin and small objects. That has the right chemicals in it to get it off.
Right.
So like you said, you know, baby wipes are great, but if you have something like this, it's even better, right?
Radiation's weird. I mean, you could be exposed to more than other people and you'd do fine. So you're just trying to, in any way, try and survive.
Minimize
it. You're just limiting as much radiation around you and on you.
Another thing we got was the Rad Triage Radiation Dosimeter Card. I don't know how to say that exactly, so I'm probably butchering it. But you can get it for like $20 on Amazon. It's a little card that fits right in your wallet. And it has a sensor strip on it that instantly turns darker when it detects harmful levels of radiation.
Yeah, I think it has colors like how dark.
Yeah,
how much
is in there.
Those
so,
are
geez, for freaking $20.
Yeah,
get one of them. You know, have it in your house.
Carrying one.
Yeah, you should.
All time,
idiot. And then one of the last things I'd say is getting a water filter straw that is rated for radiation. And
it's radiated.
They actually do make them. Seychelles, I think is how you say them. Radiological water filter straw is one that you can get.
What's the one that we got? Is that the brand?
I think it's that brand.
It's weird. It has like pellets in it.
Yeah, it
and
does.
Looks like you're sucking through a shotgun shell.
It does, yeah. So it removes 99.99% of all nuclear type radioactive contaminants. The only
limits.
Issue with it is you can only do about 20 gallons with
but
it.
But still.
But it's like $30. But
I didn't even know that those were like available to purchase.
You can survive for a week or something if you needed to with it. You know what I mean?
That's crazy.
Those are just some of the extra types of things you're going to want to look at, some gear to get you through that are kind of more of the specialty gear for, you know, nuclear type events. Yep.
Real quick, I want to talk about survival boxes.
I want you to
talk
about
them. Because I love them. Mm-hmm. The only subscription box packed with all of these essential survival supplies that you need to prep for surviving disasters. Maybe a nuclear disaster, emergencies, or your next outdoor adventure. There are many different boxes to choose from, so you can order the survival food, water, and gear required for your survival plan. Sign up today to get survival boxes delivered to your doorstep every month. No contracts. Cancel anytime. Use promo code CASUALPREPPERS for 10% off your first box on any subscription or store order at survivalboxes.com. They have awesome stuff.
Yeah, they absolutely do.
There's your food storage right there. Boom.
Yep. Do you want to talk about bug in, bug out right here? Or
yeah.
And then we'll go to the medical.
The medical stuff I was going to just save for the tip.
Okay.
We'll talk a lot about radiation sickness and treatments and basic things like that. So
obviously, you know, after that meltdown is where your big, you know, dilemma lies. Do you bug in or do you bug out? So here's just a few tips for if you need to bug in, right? So
we got an audience today.
I know. You can hear people out in the hallway. Why are they in our bunker?
No kidding.
Get them out of here. So you're going to want to bug in if you're far enough away from the disaster, which means at least 50 to 100 miles, and that there's no news of an explosion. That's the biggest thing. Because if there is an explosion, then you're going to really probably want to be hard where you're like,
I'm running at 50 miles.
I know. At that point, I'd probably just bug out.
I would just bug out. I'd plan to bug out.
Yeah. So basically, stay inside and don't leave until emergency services tell you to do so at that point, right? Bug out. if they do give you a mandatory evac notice, just freaking bug out. Don't say, I'm gonna ride this radiation wave.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
And it's hard to say. I mean, this is controversial, but you can't really trust like what the officials are going to tell you. They don't want to make a big panic because that's proven to be one of the most dangerous things.
And that's the thing. They don't want to make a panic. So if they're telling you to bug out,
they probably have already
going down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
so if your instinct is, you know, maybe let's just move out, you know, take our time and do it.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's the hard thing, because you could get to the point where if you go out and bug out, it's going to be worse for you because you're going to get that contamination.
Exactly.
You're going to get poisoned. You're going to get radiation sickness. So you got to be really careful about how you do this. So make sure you're monitoring emergency services. You have your radio, your ham, your CB, internet, TV, whatever is available. Just get as much information as you possibly can. So if you are going to bug in, basements and bunkers are obviously the best. The more that you can get between you and the air and the fallout is going to be better. So tape off your windows. If you're in a basement, even tape off those windows with that plastic sheeting and the duct tape. And then, you know, again, beware of the public water because it could be contaminated. So you're going to want to be careful. You might just want to use your water preps for a bit until you know that it's safe. So that's kind of you're bugging in.
Yeah. Like, I remember in the nuclear episode of a nuclear bomb. Mm-hmm. It's like if you're in a big building, it's good as long as, you know, you're not on the bottom or the top. You're like right in the middle. It's like limiting any exposure. So those big, huge, like if you're in the middle of Walmart, your chances of getting any of that debris is a lot.
Yeah.
That's right where I'm going.
Yes, sir.
Target of Walmart.
Yeah. So, I mean, so what about bugging out?
Yeah. So if you're, like we were just saying, if you're within that 50-mile range or less, it gets a little tricky. I would just get out of there. I'd get as far, I'd put as much distance between me and whatever event just happened. Because the wind can change. Yeah. I mean,
and that's the thing.
Chernobyl, I drifted all the way to Sweden.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, and it depends on how quick you get this information too. Because,
exactly.
Because if it happened and you're at home and it was like an hour or so ago and there's stuff already coming, or a couple hours or whatever it is, you might be better off bugging in. It's like it's such a tough decision to make. Yeah.
And anybody that lived near the California wildfires, you can see how far that smoke goes. It's like insane. Here in Utah, we were covered in smoke.
Yep.
So you can't always trust what the officials are telling you, and it might be even delayed. So, you know, once you hear or get news of that, and if you're within, I'd say, you know, even 100 miles, consider getting out of there.
Yeah, I agree.
So those basic things about your bug out plan, the crappy thing is maybe you have a bug out location. It's going to be in that area, which
might
is
be
pretty crappy.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's a bunker deep down.
Yep.
And then you're better off. So some tips there with bugging out. Your vehicle, again, we talk always about having half of a tank or more.
Yeah.
Because you don't know. You could have to get out of there. And if your town is fed by the power of the power plant.
The power of the power plant.
You know, you got megatrons floating in the air, neutrons, protons. And
electrons.
You want to get out as fast as you can. You want to be able to do it without having to stop for gas. Plus, you know, you're not going to be able to pump. It's bad. You can't pump.
Yeah.
having that cash on hand and in your vehicle and having your bug out vehicle, even if it's just your family van, ready to go. We talked about, was it just last week or the last episode where we talked about just cramming stuff in all those spots of your bug out vehicle?
I don't remember.
They're all blending together.
Yeah.
So anyways, maximize all those empty spaces. Stick crap all over in there because it'll get you a lot further. A lot of times, too, these things are going to happen when your kids are away from home at school. And we've talked about having those plans of how to get a hold of them and how or what they know to do and where to meet up and things like that so that you guys can get out safely. So you definitely have to work on your plan A, B, and C for this type of scenario because you may want to stay in. It may be hard to get out of town. We've talked about how difficult it is to travel when everybody's trying to get out, and that terrifies me even more.
I can't imagine Fukushima, what it was like after the tsunami and the earthquake, and then like 14,000 people were leaving.
They're like,
Fukushima,
please evacuate. You're like, where?
Where am I gonna go?
Ride a log out into the ocean?
Yeah.
So anything can happen, and it could be super complicated. So most important is having different structured plans and having your family involved in those and knowing where to go and what to do. So
maybe
they can't get back to you. You don't know.
Good job.
It's time for the quick and dirty medical tip.
Yeah, we didn't have any reviews, did we?
No, sir.
No reviews for everybody. If you're waiting for it, it's not coming.
How about we review this?
Oh,
we had a listener send us this thing. Oh, my gosh, so cool.
That's heavy.
I know. It's substantial. Do you remember what his name was? Chris something? Chris?
No, how sweet that is.
His name was Chris. Yeah, he made us this cool, like,
tactical geese.
Wooden, like, I think it's like a pencil and pen holder. But it has our logo on the outside. It has some tactical geese. It says number one prepper. Oh, man, we love it. Mm. We seriously, and it smells
like
good.
Burn.
Yeah. We have the best listeners, seriously.
We do. That's
so cool.
Amazing.
We love it. We love it.
Got our name tags up, too.
We got our name tags. Another listener sent us. Gosh. We got lots of cool
people
stuff.
People are awesome.
Yeah.
Really.
Anyways, let's talk about radiation sickness.
Yeah, so say you just can't get out of there, and you weren't told to, and you got sick.
Mm-hmm.
You get radiation exposure. So here are some things to kind of to look for. Interestingly
to
enough.
To look forward to.
Look forward to. So like 1 gray equals 100 rads. Mm-hmm. Rads used to be kind of the former way of explaining radiation exposure. Now they use the gray.
Mm-hmm.
Between, there's a certain amount of exposure that you're possibly going to be fine. It's mm-hmm. up to like four.
Up four gray?
Between 1 and 4 gray. So 400 rads.
Okay.
You have the possibility of a lot less complications and surviving. Anything mm-hmm. beyond that, you're pretty much screwed. And then like 10 to 12, you're dead. It pretty fast within a few days.
Yeah.
So having that card and knowing how much exposure, but usually, which is interesting, is the medical society they basically monitor radiation exposure.
He exposed his radiation
based on symptoms, surprisingly. So the first big thing is nausea and vomiting. How long since exposure does that start to happen? And that's very important. So if you're out in the middle of nowhere,
mm-hmm.
mark down
when
I start throwing up at 20 minutes past.
Yeah.
Because there's a big chart and table that shows the symptoms based on how much radiation exposure to the time of onset. So it's called prodrome symptoms, when they start.
That's crazy.
So onset of vomiting within 30 minutes to an hour, you're pretty much screwed. You've had so much radiation exposure, your body's already reacting, and there's low chance of survival. So you might as well just give up.
Just lay down and go to sleep.
But you never know. People have different reactions to the radiation, so that doesn't mean to completely give up, but there's a good chance that you've had so much that there's no coming back.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to turn into Hulk or you're going to die.
I hope it's Hulk.
Gamma radiation.
I hope it's Hulk too. Yeah.
So the minimally exposed patients is 0.5 to 1 usually will survive, and they may or may not develop cancers. I mean, everybody does anyway, so who knows?
You're going to get it at some point.
So usually they don't have any of those symptoms of anorexia, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea until, days or mm-hmm. several hours afterward. And then there's no cerebral vascular system changes, meaning like confusion, unconsciousness, things like that. If those aren't happening, you're better. You're probably going to be okay.
Well, I'm pretty confused a lot of the time. Is that, does that have something to do with it?
I'm kind of confused. He's dead.
He's dead.
So these are kind of the minor symptoms. Mm-hmm. The other thing that they do is if you have exposure, obviously you want to seek medical attention, and they'll take your blood and they'll look at your lymphocyte count because it will show the changes in how much of a drop.
Is that like midichlorians or whatever?
Yeah,
is
you may like have that. You may have those. They test those on everybody.
I got the force or what?
Yeah. So they check the lymphocyte count, and if it's low or your neutrophils are low, they can determine.
Neutrophil? Put that on my lawn last week.
Isn't that in my toothpaste? So they test those blood tests, and based on when you had your vomiting, they can kind of give an estimate of how much exposure, and they can tell you you've got about 4 days.
Yeah.
You've got...
You're done.
You're good the rest of your life. That'll be $4,000.
Yeah, per minute.
So fatal outcome are the people that have been exposed above four, even up to, 12, 10 and 12, but yet are still conscious. They will develop vomiting within 30 minutes. Cerebral vascular changes, hypotension, dizziness, they pass out or they have seizures. Those are all really bad outcomes.
You're pretty much
done for.
Yeah.
And then if they do happen to make it to the hospital, they have a severe lymphopenia. They have a really, really low blood count of lymphocytes. And their chance of survival is less than 50%.
Jeez.
And usually within 24 hours to a few days, they're dead.
Yeah.
So if you do happen to get exposed to radiation, watch for the signs and symptoms. Your body will tell you how much exposure based on your vomiting.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a good chart. Let me see if I can pull it up. The table was kind of nice. But that vomiting chart you can look up. It's like within a few hours you've had this much radiation within this, which I thought was interesting. It's like a real basic symptom.
Mm-hmm.
Gastrointestinal symptoms.
Yeah.
Are a really good sign of how much exposure.
Yeah, that's crazy.
What your chances are.
Yeah.
To treat that, they tell you to try and avoid treating your nausea and vomiting so that you can
get it out.
See, yeah, you can see how much exposure and your symptoms. It's like watch it, monitor it. But if you happen to, the weird thing about radiation is like Zofran and all those common nausea, they don't work as well as they should.
Really? Yeah.
It's just your body's reaction. They actually treat with like antipsychotics.
What?
Weird for the nausea and vomiting.
That's crazy.
Obviously, if you get hospitalized, they can do IV treatments to try and counter things. But if you're at that point, you're pretty much done for. Also, if you do have antibiotics and say you get with radiation exposure, say you worked at the plant or something, you got burns and everything, the radiation lowers your white blood cell count. So you don't have a very good ability. It's just like patients with cancer.
Mm.
Patients that have cancer treated with radiation, they're susceptible to all kinds of infections.
Mm-hmm.
The bad thing is if you're just like, I'm going to take some antibiotics, prevent it, kills off your good gut flora, and then you're susceptible to problems with your gastrointestinal system. So radiation sucks.
It does. It's not good.
Yeah. And then anyway, if you have those iodine tablets, you can look up on the FDA's website. They'll give you the dosing instructions for your whole family.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, those are just kind of the symptoms to look forward to if you get radiation exposure.
Can't wait.
Throwing up, feeling dizzy, pass out. Man, it doesn't sound very good. But interestingly enough, those symptoms can help you determine whether or not, well, he did.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's little tips.
I like that.
There isn't a lot to prepare for that. Have some IV fluids and anti-nausea medication. But
good.
Anyway.
I like it.
There you go.
Well, that's surviving a nuclear meltdown, guys. Hopefully you've got that information and you're going to write it down and do something with it. I don't know.
Yeah. Pretty crazy. But
yeah.
I mean, it's one of those possibilities that's more real than...
Yeah.
Than like the extreme.
Yeah, type no, of thing. Absolutely.
So it's kind of creepy.
So, guys, thanks for listening.
I hope it helps you.
We did not make our goal on Gone. We did not hit 5,000 views, Cameron.
What did we get to today?
I don't know where we're at. We're at like 3,500 or something, maybe.
Disappointed in our listeners.
Yeah, that's fine.
No, that was.
I'm not saying we're not going to do chapter two, but I don't know. We'll see. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Whatever.
It's hard thanks to for grow watching. That channel. And
yeah, thanks for watching. Anything else, Cameron, that we want to talk about? Huh?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No,
this is it.
I don't think so.
That's all. All right. Well, thank you, and we'll see you next time.